Hey everyone, it's Vicky. You may have noticed some changes we've been trying with Insight lately, and I wanted to fill you in. We are very excited about our new theme music. We're offering more Insight throughout the day on Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And this month, to give ourselves the chance to catch our breath a little bit, we're going to bring you a half-hour version of Insight. You can still expect the same thoughtful conversations and topics every Monday through Thursday, but now from 9 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. Let us know what you think. All right, here's today's show.
Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Mike Haggerty for Vicky. We hear it from our local, regional, and state leaders all the time. California has a housing crisis, meaning not enough homes for those who want to live here, and they say we need to strip away red tape, build now, and build fast. When you crunch the numbers a bit, though, they seem to tell a different story. Do we need more housing units in California? Maybe. Affordable housing? Absolutely. But if you look at how building has ramped up over the years, compared with the changing dynamics of California's population, the question now is, are we really in a housing crisis after all? Hans Johnson's a senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California and an expert in domestic migration, housing in California, and population projections. He joins us now to help make sense of the data. Hans, thanks for joining us on Insight.
My pleasure, Mike.
So the first line in your post on PPIC's website about this issue says, California is in the midst of an unprecedented demographic period. Let's start there. What's happening here in California?
For the first time ever, the state is losing population, and it's kind of a perfect storm of demographic events that have led to that. We have the lowest birth rates ever recorded in our state. Birth rates are going down nationwide as well. So we have fewer births, which of course add to the population. The pandemic led to a dramatic increase in deaths. But in general, deaths have been going up because the population is aging. And so that's occurring apart from the pandemic. And then finally, and most importantly, California had a large outflow of migrants to other states at the same time that international migration slowed down dramatically during the pandemic. And so it's that interstate out-migration that was the primary reason California lost over 500,000 people in the last few years.
What are some of the reasons that people are leaving the state, and where are they moving to?
So most people who move are going to surrounding western states. And what we've seen consistently across many years is that people who move are moving for financial reasons. Either they're moving for a job, or more commonly, they're moving to find less expensive housing. And when we look at the states they're going to, we see that those states and the metropolitan areas and cities they're going to are less expensive than those that they came from in California. The other big change, though, that happened in the last few years that led to an increased outflow was a large number of people who were able to work remotely during the pandemic chose to leave California. The vast majority of people who work remotely didn't, but large numbers did. And that led to an increase in the outflow, especially among more highly educated and more high-income workers.
Not everyone who moves out, though. Let's talk about in-state migration for a bit. Are we still seeing people who are moving out of places like the Bay Area or LA, but still staying in California?
We sure are. In fact, there are more moves within the state than there are out of the state. And as everyone in Sacramento is probably aware, a large flow of people have moved from the Bay Area to the Sacramento region. In Southern California, the flow from Los Angeles to especially the Inland Empire is the longstanding trend as well.
You mentioned the flow into Sacramento. What do the details of that look like?
So we have people who, in some cases, are moving to the Sacramento region, and I would also now include the Stockton area and Lodi area, who actually are still commuting back to jobs in the Bay Area. Again, remote work allows some of that to happen. But in the Sacramento case, we also see a large flow of people who are moving to Sacramento and finding a job up there.
What are you finding in terms of the changing dynamic of household makeup here in California? Has something happened to the traditional single family dynamic or roommate sharing a space?
Yes, exactly. So one of the conundrums of what's happened in California with this population loss is that the same time that we've lost over 500,000 people, We've added several hundred thousand new housing units over the last few years. And those housing units aren't going vacant. It's not that no one's living in them. In fact, people are. Instead, what's happening is that Californians are spreading out. We have fewer people living in more housing units. And the way that works is that we have fewer people per housing unit. And there are lots of reasons for that. Some of them we already kind of touched on. People are having fewer children. So, of course, that leads to a decline in the number of people in a household. The population is aging, and older people, especially seniors, are more likely to live alone or with just one other person. But then also we see that roommates who prior to the pandemic might have had two or three roommates are now having fewer roommates and spreading out that way. And then I should note that the nature of the new housing that we're building also has led to a decline in the number of people per housing unit. Specifically, we're building a lot of multi-unit housing in many cases in large buildings with five or more units per building. And the number of single family detached homes that we're building in California is actually declining.
It feels like our conversation has kind of naturally morphed from people to housing. With the overall population on the decline, housing units projecting upward, are we still in a housing crisis?
I think, well, certainly we are. And the reasons why I say that is that we have still low vacancy rates, lower than in the rest of the nation in terms of places that are for rent or places that are for sale. So that's a sign of very strong and continued housing demand. And for several decades, we had actually added more people than we had added housing units on a percentage basis. And so we have a deficit of housing in California, an undersupply, if you will. So that by some estimates, California was 3.5 million housing units short of what we needed to accommodate a population of our size. So even though we are building more housing now and losing population, we still have a lot of indications that we do have a housing crisis and we do have a housing shortage. Having said that, it is the case that especially if these trends continue, we will start to cut into some of that housing supply deficit.
How much of this broad housing crisis, though, is actually an affordable housing crisis? And I'll give you an example. There are homes in West Roseville right now that are advertising that they start in the low 400,000s. Now, I know that there's no hard and fast income rule about qualifying for a mortgage, but it seems to me that if we're talking 10% down, that's $40,000 right there. You're probably going to have to be around six-figure income to qualify for this $400,000 house.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the housing crisis is especially acute for people from low and middle-income families. And we see it in all kinds of ways. So, for example, the share of income that Californians spend on housing is substantially higher than in the rest of the country, and especially much, much higher for low-income and middle-income households. We know from PPIC statewide survey that a large share of Californians want to own a home, many who do not want to own a home, and many prefer a single-family home. So, at the same time that we are building, and rightly so, a lot of multi-unit buildings in dense cities, which is the right type of housing to build in those places. You can accommodate more people in a taller structure with more units than a single family house. But many people want to own a single family home, and we're not building those to the same extent. So you do see these very expensive new housing developments like the one you mentioned in Roseville. Roseville is kind of an interesting example. So unlike most larger cities in California, Roseville gained population since the last census. And the vast majority of homes that were built in Roseville, and it had a fairly robust housing construction, were single family units. So that was kind of, you know, the old pattern of California population growth: suburban sprawl, single family units, families moving in, lots of people per household. Whereas in most large cities in California, including Sacramento, housing growth was fairly robust, but the vast majority of that housing growth was in multi-unit buildings that don't accommodate as many people per unit. And at the same time that the existing housing stock was experiencing declines in the number of people per unit, that new housing couldn't make up for that decline.
What happened to the starter home? You know, where do you have to live in California to get first-time home buying experience without going broke? Or is that even possible in California anymore?
Well, you know, it is possible in some places, but what people are looking for is a combination of housing affordability and amenities, certainly a job, although again, with remote work, the job equation isn't quite as set to geography as it was in the past. But there are places that are less expensive. They tend to be rural. They tend to be more isolated, places like Redding or Eureka. But what many people end up doing is leaving the state to places like Phoenix or Seattle or Portland. And those flows, as I noted, have actually increased during the pandemic and over the last few years.
Only got about a minute left, so let me ask you. You're an expert in population projections. Let's flash forward 10 years, 2033. What does California's population look like, and what about housing?
Yeah, I'm going to do a complete hedge here. You know, we've never been in a situation like we are right now where we've been losing population. So it's really hard to forecast. The Department of Finance, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, just produced a new series of projections that suggest California is going to essentially have no population growth over the next several decades. I think that is as plausible as a scenario as any right now. So if that turns out to be the case, and at the same time, we are able to continue to build new housing, eventually we should make a dent, a sizable dent in our housing crisis. I don't think any of us kind of hoped that that would be the way we would get out of our housing crisis, is by not being able to accommodate population growth, but it's a possibility.
Hans Johnson's a senior fellow at the PPIC and an expert in domestic migration and housing in California. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, we'll learn about a public radio podcast made by, about, and for teenagers, and for anyone else who wants to learn what's on their minds. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Mike Haggerty for Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
And you're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm Mike Haggerty for Vicki Gonzalez. We have a lot of options these days for staying informed. Probably brought you here to Insight today. But most topics have a common thread. They come from the perspective of adults. A podcast from KALW, a public radio station in the Bay Area, is created by, about, and for teenagers. The new season of TBH, that's all in lowercase, launches today. TBH stands for To Be Honest. And these young journalists and hosts take that meaning to heart. From the impact of AI, like ChatGPT at school, to finding empowerment with climate change, suffering loss from the fentanyl crisis, these young people are giving us a glimpse of how their lives are being shaped by the moments of today. Joining us is Carolina Quadros. She's a producer for KALW's new season of TBH. Carolina, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, we're so happy to have you here. From the perspective of a teen, what did you see that was lacking in conversations and media coverage, and how did you want to close that gap?
A major thing is really just the perspective from us. It's definitely difficult living in a world where most of the things that we do are dictated by adults, and you aren't really taken seriously most of the time. Say you're 15 or 16, no one really listens to you, no one really believes you, so you don't really get your perspective in. So it's really just adults dictating teenagers' life based off of what they think teenagers think like, which is really not true. I think we know ourselves better than people from a different generation would know us. And it's nice to just be able to almost force people to listen to our perspective, force them to understand a little bit about how our brain works, how we function.
You've been part of previous seasons of TBH. How did you get connected with KALW in this podcast?
Yeah, I worked on them with them last year. Could you repeat the last part?
Yeah, how did you get connected with KALW and TBH?
Actually, the person that introduced me to podcasting when I was a sophomore in high school did an episode with TBH about 3 or 4 summers ago. She recommended that I try it out. I connected with my editors and I absolutely adored them. It's been a great community to be part of. I really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot more about public radio. I've learned more about just general world topics. I've learned a lot from all of my peers and it's been a great time. Yeah.
Your episode of the new season takes on a painful subject, a fellow classmate who died of fentanyl poisoning in 2021, Colin Walker, senior at Carlmont High School in San Mateo County. What inspired you to dive into that topic?
So I was a junior when Colin lost his life at my school, and it was definitely a very, very difficult time for everyone in the community, especially for his family and friends. But there was a silver lining in everything, in that I noticed like a phenomenon almost happened where typically you tend to see that trends, that there's a trend when tragic events occur, that everyone talks about it for a week or two and then it just dies down and everyone tries to almost ignore that it ever happened, blocks it out of their brain. But a lot of efforts were made from his family, from my high school journalism program and from the school in order to keep his name remembered and keep the cause of his death remembered. And it was very empowering to realize like how a community brought such a painful and tragic death to justice and really tried to shine a light and make a situation that was really difficult for people something that could be educational and something that could be helpful and something that could bring us all together.
We have some clips from your episode of TBH. You spoke with your friend and classmate, Chesney Evert. Is it Evert or Evert?
Evert.
So let's take a quick listen about how Colin's death affected them.
Anger, one, that this had happened to a person so young and a person our age who was just about to graduate high school, and fear that this issue was becoming so prevalent that even our bubble of the Bay Area couldn't protect us.
Chesney went on to lead a team of journalists at your high school to raise awareness about fentanyl. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, so a group of journalists decided to come up with a journalism multimedia package, and Chesney was the one that led it. She oversaw it. She was the one that was communicating with the family. The family was also very involved in this piece, and it included podcasts, video, many written pieces, infographics, and the whole point of it was to not only highlight Colin's life, Colin's story, and show the community who this person was, but also to really fill people's brains with facts about fentanyl lacing, try to inform everyone in our community as much as we could, try to encourage them to be more passionate about it, to know how it works, to know how much it can affect every person in our community. And it was, especially since fentanyl lacing is just a rising epidemic, it is increasingly more and more dangerous and it's more prevalent, especially in teenagers' lives, which was something that was never really considered about 5 years ago. It's important that we are educating our community of teenagers about this issue. And I think everyone in our community cared about this piece specifically because it hit so close to home. And so it was really amazing to see how this journalism piece made a class of about over 2,000 kids extremely educated on such an issue that is really severe and also very important. And I completely credit them to that. It was incredible.
You also spoke with Colin's mom, Elizabeth Walker, about how students' actions following her son's death have shaped her grief.
The high school students who your team, like, they made sure they got as much out there as they could. Is that going to prevent all future deaths? No, but maybe some.
What do you hope that listeners take away, other than what you've talked about here, about the dangers of fentanyl from that episode?
I hope that listeners really take away, first of all, how prevalent it is, how serious it is, how it can impact people that you wouldn't necessarily expect it to, when I initially was talking to some of the people working at KLW about the piece, some of the adults were really surprised to hear about this because they were like, I've really only heard about fentanyl deaths from the older generation, maybe people who are homeless, who do not necessarily like, who are typically taking drugs on a daily. And this is a case where not only was it a teenager, but it wasn't a teenager who was partying. It wasn't a teenager that was taking drugs recreationally. It was a teenager that was struggling with his mental health and was having a very, very difficult time and was taking drugs as a result of that in an attempt to cope, and wasn't in the right state of mind in order to fill his body with something more nourishing at the time. And it's a really tragic case, but it's also something that's important to realize can easily happen. And I hope listeners just realize that it really can impact your community. And unfortunately, statistically, there's a higher chance that it will at one point. And it's just important to educate yourself on it, educate others about it, take the time to really understand what this epidemic is, and also to have a lot of compassion to the families that have lost people to fentanyl lacing or to fentanyl overdoses, because it is something very, very difficult to go through. And it is a very, very, very confusing and painful grief process.
TBH is described as a podcast by, about, and for teens. What kind of feedback have you gotten from your peers?
So I have definitely heard from my peers to just make it more conversational. Every time that we are recording or we're writing our podcast, everyone's just like, pretend we're talking, because we're talking to teenagers. There's no need to use all these fancy words to try to impress anyone. Let's get the point to them. Let's make them feel like someone is talking to them. Let's make them feel like it's not just some teenager trying to act like an adult, trying to tell teenagers how they should think, what they should be hearing. It is a teenager talking to another teenager, trying to hit their soul, trying to show them that I am like you. I am viewing all these problems that usually only people that are 10 years older will cover and talk to us about. But here I'm listening to you. I get your perspective.
Do you see that you may be not only performing a public service with what you do, but increasing engagement among a group of people not known for consuming current events and news?
Yeah, I really hope I'm doing that. I think that's something, especially all like the other teenagers that I've worked with, we're all very passionate about news. We're passionate about radio, but it's not common. That's not a common thing. Among my friends, I'm the only person that will open the news app. I'm the only person that will turn up on the radio while I'm driving. I think teenagers especially tend to get a lot of their news from social media, whether it's TikTok or Instagram. And obviously that leads big room for misinformation. And it's just not a reliable media source. And I really hope, at least even just encouraging my friends and my peers to listen to this, I really hope I'm able to introduce more people into public radio, into journalism, into caring about all these issues that you might not necessarily come give the time of day just through social media. And I think it's important. We're the future generation. It's important for us to know how to properly get news information. It's important for us to know where to find reliable journalism. It's important for us to care about these issues that will come up in our lives, that will be relevant to our lives.
I've only got about 20 seconds left, but I have to know, you're an incoming freshman at UC Berkeley. Are you planning on staying in media?
100%. I'm studying media studies, actually, as my major. I'm planning on minoring in journalism. This is my passion. I plan to stay connected to KLW, to work with the Daily Californian. I love this world. I think it's an important world to keep alive, and I plan on continuing to work on that.
Great. Maybe we'll get to work together someday. Carolina Quadros is a producer for KALW's new season of TBH, a podcast by, about, and for teenagers. New season just dropped today. Carolina, thank you.
Thank you.
That's Insight. Learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Want to join the conversation? Love to have you. Insight@capradio.org. Thank you to managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Megan Minotta. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. The engineer is Chris Feltz. Our show music by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Mike Haggerty for Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.